Blog Talk Radio.
Forbidden archaeology, forgotten history, divination, magic, cryptozoology, UFOs, nature, science, and spirit. All this and more right here on the Main Street Universe Radio Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Miss Susan Weed. My name is Daniel Michael, and we had a brief technical glitch at the beginning of this, but we are back. And we will return in just a second with your hostess, Miss Susan Weed, for another episode of Green Magic, Green Medicine. Join us. Everyone, and welcome back. This is Green Magic, Green Medicine with your hostess, Miss Susan Weed. She's a master herbalist, talks about herbal medicine, psychology of healing, women's health issues, and other things. And I see she is in the queue, so I'm going to go ahead and turn her microphone on. Are you there, Susan? Welcome.
I am here. Green blessings to you and everyone.
And we were having a few glitches here. They might not be ones that show up, but when I was starting the page, it was a little funny this evening, so I wasn't sure exactly what was going on. I called
well,
in.
When I was first with you, I could hardly hear you, but now I can hear you quite well.
Okay, good. I think everything's okay now.
Good. Excellent. How have you been?
I've been well. And all is well. Everything's getting better and stabilizing and things like that. So I feel good.
Good. Good, good. Well, I have gotten so much interesting things in the mail that I thought I would talk just for a few moments about some of the really fascinating things that I've gotten in the mail. First off, I finally got my copy of a brand new book called Women Healers of the World by Holly Bell Buono. And it is a gorgeous book, and it is subtitled The Traditions, History, and Geography of Herbal Medicine. Ah, what an absolute thrill to have that. And then I also received a copy of Heart of the Earth, Nurturing the Sacred Feminine by Rosalind Sophia Brellat, Brellat. She says, a woman's love arises from the heart of the earth, her womb place, her true place of belonging, her inherently wild place. So, whoa, that's a great way to start the mail, isn't it? With two books, one big lavish book and one little kind of tidy and self-drawn book. And then in the periodical pile, I got one of my favorite periodicals, The Women's Health Activist. And The Women's Health Activist is subtitled A Voice for Women, A Network for Change. And it's the National Women's Health Network. And they're celebrating 39 years of advocating for women's health. If you want to know more about the National Women's Health Network, find them at www.nwhn.org. And as they say, they have been working for us, for all women, for 40 years. You know, when I put out my book, Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, I was one of the very few voices saying to women, don't take hormones, don't take estrogen, don't take hormone replacement. These things are not good for your health. And I was looked at as being kind of on the fringe and an oddball. And, you know, I was kind of included because they always wanted to have a balanced thing, like, here's what the mainstream thinks, and here's what you're going to do, and here's, like, the fringe view, just so you know that you've listened to it. And it was the National Women's Health Network that actually caused the studies to be done that showed that estrogen replacement and hormone replacement did indeed, as opposed to what they were saying, increase heart disease risk for women, not decrease it, and increase breast cancer risk as well. So the National Women's Health Network has been there in many, many ways for us all along. Another way that I have been viewed as quite marginal is in my book, Breast Cancer? Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, where I come out pretty strongly against mammograms. And mammogram, of course, has been called the gold standard of health care. And, you know, don't you deserve to have a mammogram? This is their lead article. Back in February, a new study, this one published in the British Medical Journal, again questioned the value of screening mammography in the general population. This gold standard study with a large randomized sample followed over a significant time period found 25-year follow-up for breast cancer incidence and mortality of the Canadian National Breast Screening Study found no reduction in mortality among women diagnosed with breast cancer discovered with or without mammography.
That's interesting.
She goes on to say that a black woman kind of called her to task because she wrote an editorial about this study and said women should question whether or not they should have mammograms. And this black woman said to her, how dare you say that women, all women, of all ages and all colors should question mammography when you're a white woman and this study was done with white women. What should I do? She said, you know, had I spoken for women I don't represent? Should I stay silent? And as I contemplated these options, she says, I felt the tears well up in my eyes. I remembered all too well what silence bought me before. My silence cost me my mom, and it cost my mom not only her life, but her dream. Diane, my beloved mom, was diagnosed with breast cancer in her early 50s following a routine screening mammogram. At that time, we didn't know very much about ductal carcinoma in situ, DCIS, and the recommended treatment was surgery followed by radiation and chemotherapy and then hormonal therapy in the form of tamoxifen. Despite being a women's health activist, I didn't know much about breast cancer, breast cancer treatment, so we just complied with this recommended regime. As the years progressed, I studied, followed the science, engaged with leading scholars, and began to question whether the mammogram that led to my mom's diagnosis was necessary and whether the cancer they found really needed to be treated. But I stayed silent. What good would it do, I asked myself. At this point, my mom decided not to complete her doctoral degree. She found it too hard to balance her cancer treatment, teaching, and collecting data for her dissertation. She delayed pursuing her education until her children were out of the house, and she always wanted to be a doctor, but now keeping herself free of breast cancer seemed to be more important. She was a proud breast cancer survivor. She did the walks and the runs. Her house was filled with pink ribbon paraphernalia. She believed the mammogram had saved her life, and she was grateful. In 2005, she started complaining of shortness of breath, and I lost my mom to an aggressive uterine cancer caused by her breast cancer treatment. Mm. By then, we knew that 10 years of tamoxifen puts women at risk of uterine cancer. And this is why I care so deeply about the overdiagnosis caused by routine screening mammography. That's an article by Tracy Weitz, PhD. So her mom didn't get her doctorate, but Tracy did.
It's fascinating.
And again, my book, Breast Cancer Breast Health exclamation point, The Wise Woman Way, published in 1996. Almost 20 years ago now, raised all these issues and pointed women in the right direction, away from mammography, away from long-term use of tamoxifen, away from chemotherapy and radiation for ductal carcinoma in situ. As a matter of fact, I go so far in my book as to call it a non-cancer.
Wow.
Dr. Susan Love, one of the leading breast cancer specialists in this country, says that on autopsy, women killed by accident or murder, 40% of them are found to have ductal carcinoma in situ. The emperor has no clothes. Mammography is not healthy for women. Mammography is not early detection. Mammography does not save lives. It hasn't for 20 years.
Mm.
And October is not Breast Cancer Awareness Month. October is Breast Health Awareness Month. And there's a lot of things we can do to keep our breasts healthy besides going to a doctor once a year and having our breasts exposed to radiation. And just to really be clear about this, because I wanted to be clear about it, you know, I was being told, oh, why are you making such a fuss about it? It's not so much radiation. And I was being told, well, you know, it's like the amount of radiation if you were like in a jet airplane flying across the country, or the amount of radiation if you lived at a high altitude. So again, my concern about the radiation in mammograms was downplayed. But when I actually went so far as to do my best to get actual scientific numbers, not just, oh, it's about like this or it's about like that, but the kinds of things that we use in science, which are numbers, I found that these were the numbers. Find them here. Is that page fallen out of my book? I'm looking in breast cancer breast health exclamation point to find the numbers that I found, and I'm not finding them, so that's a little confusing. We'll go on, but just to say, the amount of radiation in a mammogram is not inconsequential. It is, in fact, a very large amount of radiation. And what one radiation specialist told me was that if a woman has a mammogram every year between the ages of 40 and 60, that her breasts will absorb as much radiation as if she had been present for a nuclear bomb.
Wow.
Yeah, that really did it for me, to say, oh my gosh, we're talking about, you know, hard radiation here. We're not talking about some little soft radiation. In fact, a mammogram is not just one X-ray, it's four.
Mm.
Because each breast is imaged above and below and side to side. So there's two X-rays of each breast. Here we go, I found the numbers. 1 week at a high altitude, such as Denver, Colorado, is less than one millirad per week. A jet flight of 6 hours, that would be from East Coast to West Coast or back again, is five millirads. A chest X-ray is 16 millirads, and about one millirad reaches breast tissue. And the smallest possible dose from a screening mammogram done with the newest equipment calibrated just before the test, and ha-ha, most of the time this isn't going to be what's happening, is 340 millirads.
Hmm.
This is not comparable to a jet flight, is it?
No.
You'd have to make a jet flight like that weekly, every week of the year, to be exposed to that much radiation. And even at that, it wouldn't be your breast tissue being exposed to that much radiation. It would be your entire body.
Right. It would be looser, not all focused on one place.
Exactly. So, that's what's in the mail. A lot of exciting stuff. I am so glad that more and more people are coming to recognize what's going on. I have a poster up on my wall of a really wonderful woman who had a breast removed and then had the area where her breast was removed tattooed and made a poster of herself standing with her arms outstretched. And I always love the poster. I still love the poster. And I got in touch with the woman and asked her to write a comment for my book, Breast Cancer, Breast Health, ! And she refused because of my stand on ductal carcinoma in situ, which is what she had. And
wow.
Because she believed the myth that the mammogram had found her cancer, that the treatment had cured her cancer, and that she was alive because of that, and that I was misleading women. And yet, 20 years later here, study after study is showing that mammograms do not decrease mortality, increase survival for at least white women. We haven't really dealt with the question that the black woman brought up, have we?
Yeah.
And I also wanted to talk tonight about being cold. Not having a cold. But being cold, because some people are being cold, aren't they? And I don't mean like, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I don't mean like socially cold. I mean like cold.
I think when it cools down, it feels beautiful.
You think down feels beautiful?
Yeah, I think when it cools down a little bit, it starts to feel really nice.
When it cools down, it starts to feel really nice, yes. Absolutely. And yet I see people, even as it's starting to cool a little bit here, starting to what I would call overdress. Hats, gloves, mufflers, saying, oh my gosh, it's freezing, to which I usually reply, it's 52. That's hardly freezing. And I want to talk about what happens when the outdoor temperature changes to our bodies. Because it's a fascinating thing, and it's a confusing thing, and it's a thing that can help us stay healthier.
Okay.
And that is that the capillaries, the little bitty blood vessels in our bodies, are there to feed the cells and tissues of our bodies, but they're also there to help us regulate our heat. Because we regulate heat by pushing heat out through the skin and, of course, also sweating. So during the summertime, and in people who are adapted to the heat, the capillary bed comes to the surface of the skin and allows for more profuse sweating. And herbalists used to call herbs that could help this blood thinners.
Hmm.
Herbs that increased the capillary bed and increased its ability to get to the surface of the skin. In the wintertime, when we want to keep core heat and we don't want to be radiating heat out through our skin, the capillary bed is to shrink and to pull more into the core. These are very small movements. We're not talking about really large things here, and certainly not something we could, like, see with our naked eye. They're kind of small internal changes. Just that small internal change between really sitting up and feeling your spine aligned and at ease and slumping and feeling the pain here and the pain there and the pain everywhere else. Small changes can make really big changes in our overall health. And so herbalists talked about things that were used in the fall to help draw the capillary bed in. And sometimes the ones used in the spring were called spring tonics, and sometimes the ones used in the fall were called fall tonics, or blood thinners and blood thickeners. Nowadays, we have drugs that are blood thinners, and they actually interfere with the ability of the blood to clot. I remember one man saying to me that he stopped taking his Coumadin when he was driving to work and he looked down and blood was pouring out of a hangnail on his finger.
Wow.
Yeah, and he said, this is just, you know, too much. The dosage is, you know, very hard to get exactly right. And that's what we think of as blood thinners now. And there are actually herbs that work that way, too, that actually do interfere with the blood's ability to clot. They interfere with vitamin K synthesis and usage. There are new classes of blood-thinning drugs that don't do that, which I really welcome, because people who are taking blood-thinning drugs, and a lot of people have been prescribed blood-thinning drugs, we're told not to eat leafy greens, which to me is a mainstay of a healthy diet. And why? Because leafy greens contain vitamin K, and so there would be more vitamin K to be an antagonist against the drug. It's like, wait a second, right? Are we taking this drug to be healthy, or are we taking this drug, and then we're going to be not healthy so that we need the drug? Sometimes it's hard for me to figure this out. But what we're talking about is not that kind of blood thinning. We're actually talking about a movement of the capillary bed. And right now, most of us, because our capillary bed is up for the summer, do feel a little cold when it gets colder. And especially as the temperatures of the fall fluctuate. We seek out the sun and we feel warm and we're like, oh yeah, and then the wind blows and we go, and we feel that cold on our skin. And the goats really taught me about this. Because goats are pretty sensitive to breezes. They get pneumonia pretty easily. In general, goats are sturdy animals, but they're not horses. They can't be out in the rain and they can't be out in the wind. They really need a shelter and a good, warm, tight shelter. And so I would always take it upon myself as soon as I felt cold to go out there and start tightening up my goat barn and nailing up cloth over all the cracks and getting the windows tightened up with plastic and everything hunky-dory and good and sweet for the goats. And the goats would just rip it apart. And at first I thought, oh, these goats, what? Don't they see that I'm trying to do something nice for them? And then I realized that I needed to change the gestalt. Instead of looking at it from my perspective and what I was doing for the goats and why were the goats thwarting me, to ask myself, what do the goats want? What are the goats saying? And I realized that the goats stay warm during the winter by growing an undercoat. My goats are primarily short-haired goats, and so their hair is short and on their skin, and not much protection from the cold, which is great. That means they can deal with the summer. But in the winter, because they are alpine goats and come from cold places, they have the ability to grow a very dense fur under that. Different kind of hair, an altogether different kind of hair, a crinkled hair. And that crinkled hair, of course, keeps the air in, and that air acts as insulation. And if the goats didn't get cold enough in these transition months of September and October, they wouldn't produce enough of this crinkly undercoat hair to stay warm in the winter. So where I thought I was doing something really nice for the goats thought I was trying to make them freeze to death. Right, because I was denying them the signal that their bodies needed that it was winter. Of course, it's merely one of the signals. We're also noticing a distinct change in the amount of light that we get now that we have crossed the threshold of equinox and moving now into the dark time of the year where there is more dark than light. And again, we notice that, and our bodies notice that. So here's a plea for getting cold. Here's a little voice that always seems to say the wrong thing, huh? Don't take hormones, don't get mammograms, saying once again the wrong thing, get cold. It might just help you be healthier this winter. I don't think that you're going to grow an undercoat. I don't think that you're going to grow crinkly little hairs, but I think your capillaries are going to change, and I think your nervous system is going to be different, and I think your hormone levels will be different, and I think how your cardiovascular system works all together with your hormones and your nerves is going to be different if you really let yourself get cold and feel what that is. As we get into the dark and the cold part of the year.
And of course, I do construction work still, so I will be getting cold.
Will indeed be getting cold. And I'm not asking you or anyone to pain yourself or torture yourself.
Right.
Do protect yourself and give yourself what you need. And see if there isn't some place where you could experience a little bit more of the cold.
Yes.
And see what happens. Make that your experiment as we move into this dark time. And with that, I guess we must say goodbye.
We are just about out of time again.
And once again, a delightful half hour spent here on the Main Street Universe.
Absolutely. And thank you for joining us again.
Green blessings, and remember, everyone, herbal medicine is people's medicine. It's the medicine that's right outside your door.
Absolutely, and for everyone listening, there's attached to the show page Susan Weed's bookstore, so check out her books at her bookstore, and she's here with us every Tuesday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Mystery Universe Radio Network, and she runs the Wise Woman Center up there, so check out everything on her website. It's linked here. And have a great evening, everyone. Remember that Main Street Universe is the show and network reminding you that the mysteries and possibilities of the universe are closer to Main Street than you have ever imagined. Have a great evening. And remember to get a little bit cold.